So when I was 18 years old and a freshman in college, I got invited to a very fancy dinner at the house of the president of the college. It was a dinner to honor a visiting scholar. I knew someone who knew someone, so I was someone's plus one. I felt like someone had made a mistake. But I borrowed a fancy red dress of a friend of mine's, and I bought a new pair of very pretty and just a little bit too tall pair of heels. I went to that dinner and I did my best to make intelligent small talk and not let on just how young I really was. I thought I was doing pretty well too. That was until the buffet dinner was served. I got my plate of food and I have to tell you, I was pretty excited. It was a whole lot better than any of the plates of food I had been eating in the dining halls. I took that plate of food back to where my friend was sitting, and as I walked across the living room and reached that one step, my shoe caught, and I went flying flat on my face. I distinctly remember thinking as I was going down, "Save the plate, save the plate." It is one of those moments that literally plays out in slow-mo in my memory. That feeling when I knew I was going down and all heads were turning to stare and the wait staff was coming over to help me up. I'm sure my face was the same color as my dress. And to tell you the truth, I don't even remember if I got another plate of food. I just remember feeling like I had been found out. I tried passing myself off as something I was not, and I got found out. That kind of experience is certainly part of the experience of Esther in this story from our Hebrew scriptures, but it is so much more than that. The story of Esther and Purim is an interesting one. As with any biblical story, there is argument over this one. There has been argument for centuries. Some of the details of the Persian court appear accurate, and yet there are some details that cannot be confirmed as historical. Myth or history, what bits of truth are held within this story? So first, let us consider her name, Esther, which is really not her real name. If you were to read this book of the Bible, you would find out that her Hebrew name, and I'm not a Hebrew scholar, so I'm sure I'm not pronouncing this correctly, her Hebrew name was Hadassah, which is related to the myrtle bush. Her Hebrew identity is related to that bush, and there is symbolism in that. Many world cultures assign meaning to the myrtle blossom to include beauty, love, paradise, and immortality. For the Jews, myrtle can symbolize sweetness, justice, divine generosity, peace, God's promise, and recovery. But when Mordecai, her uncle, brings her to the king's court, she is given the name Esther and told not to expose her identity. Esther is related to the name of Ishtar, the goddess of fertility, love, war, sex, and power. She is attempting to pass as something she is not in order to survive. She is attempting to gain more privilege than she had in order to survive. Now, privilege is a word that is used a lot these days. The idea of privilege, that some people benefit from unearned and largely unacknowledged advantages, even if those advantages are not discriminatory. That idea has a pretty long history. In the 1930s, W.E. Du Bois wrote about the psychological wage that enabled poor whites to feel superior to poor blacks. During the civil rights era, activists talked about white skin privilege. But the concept really came into its own in the late 80s when Peggy McIntosh, a women's studies scholar at Wellesley, started writing about it. She described white privilege, and really any privilege, is like an invisible, weightless backpack of special provisions, maps, passports, code books, visas, clothes, tools, and blank checks. McIntosh had started by looking at white privilege and male privilege, but we know now that there are many kinds of privilege: class, physical ability, looks, sexual orientation, gender. And we know that this is not totally straightforward. One can have the privilege of being white-skinned while not having the privilege of class, for instance. That is the intersectionality of privilege. In some ways, Esther had little status or privilege to begin with, except that she knew someone who knew someone. And isn't that the way we often find our privilege? We may be born into it, a form of knowing someone. We may befriend someone. We may go to school and meet someone. We may work alongside someone. We may marry up. We may pretend to be someone we are not. All of those are ways of finding or getting more privilege. Esther's uncle saw an opportunity. The king had gotten mad at his wife, the queen who had disobeyed him, and the king ordered her gone, vanquished from the kingdom. And when he calmed down, he realized he was pretty lonely and he wanted a wife. Mordecai put his young and pretty niece into the harem of eligible young women. Perhaps that is one of the privileges that Esther started with, that she came with, her good looks and her strong character and her connection to her uncle Mordecai. It sounds a lot like a lot, but in reality, in that culture, in that time, to be a young woman with no father and no permanent household, no one to look after you, no home to live in, was a very, very vulnerable position. And what could that have to do with us? Well, Esther found favor with the king. Evidently, her beauty and presence struck just the right note with him, and he made her queen. It's a fairy tale, really, isn't it? It's a little Cinderella story stuck into the Hebrew scriptures. Purim, as I told the kids, is really not one of the major Jewish holidays. As I understand it, it's often more of a cultural holiday than a religious holiday, sort of, or maybe like our Halloween and Mardi Gras rolled together. But it is a story with two strong women in it, Vashti and Esther. And it is a story that is Wagnerian in its twists and turns. Lies are told, information is leaked, people are banished, threats are made. Vashti disobeyed the king when he demanded, and I did sort of soften this for the children, when he demanded that she come dancing naked before his guests wearing nothing but her royal crown. And so she defied him at the end of what sounds like a pretty obnoxious frat party, and she was banished from the kingdom. Esther also disobeyed the king by coming into his court when she had not been called for, but she was a bit more politic, and also the king was probably not so drunk. She was not so defiant. She only asked that he and Haman come for a meal the next day. She used her privilege in a wily kind of way. This month, our theme is about risk. It takes risk to both admit the privilege you have and the privilege you don't have. Because when you admit that, you do make yourself a bit vulnerable. And that is the risk. Esther had a little privilege to start with, her looks and her uncle. And she was able to maneuver herself into a position where she would have even more privilege. And once she was queen, she seemed pretty comfortable with her privilege and wanted to keep it. Who could blame her? Think about what privilege you might have gotten in your life. It's kind of a nice thing to keep. But when her uncle Mordecai found out what Haman was doing, his plot to remove the Jews, he reached out to Esther and he asked her for help. And her initial answer to him was, "All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes before the king inside the inner court without being called, there is but one law. All alike are to be put to death." And Mordecai's response to Esther was, "Do not think that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silence at such a time as this, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another quarter. But you and your father's family will perish. Who knows? Perhaps you have come to royal dignity for just such a time as this. To his initial request, she reasonably said, I may be queen, but he is king. No one gets in without his permission, and the punishment is death. Come on, where's that going to get us? And Mordecai rightly responded, don't think your privilege will protect you. If all the Jews die, you die also. And if all the relief comes from somewhere else and you are found to be on the side against the Jews, you will not live in that scenario either. What choice do you have, Esther? But instead of confronting the king head on as Vashti had done, Esther got wily. She got into the king's inner court and did not demand anything, but instead asked that the king and Haman dine with her the next day. She knew that the king loved her, and she counted on his compassion. And it worked. In what is a complicated soap opera of a story of dinners and twists and counter twists, Esther was able to reveal Haman for the lying snake that he was. She was able to show Mordecai as a loyal servant to the king, and Haman as a man who wanted to kill and deport the Jews. In the end, Haman is killed, and Esther, Mordecai, and the Jews are safe. And what does that have to do with us today? Privilege really means having power over someone else or having more power than someone else. We who use are good at using whatever privilege we have to help others, but we are not always so good at giving up some of our privilege so someone else can have more. We're better at asking people to be like us instead of accepting that they might be different. And in that, we are not so different from Esther and not so different from other human beings. But it is important to know this about ourselves. Let me give you an example. Here is something I see in our UU world. Ministers who come from very poor backgrounds, whose family are blue collar, or who grew up on government assistance, even when they feel the call to ministry and they go to college and they might be the first person in their family to go to college and then they go to graduate school and they get those degrees and they get the education, they still often feel like they have to pass. They cannot admit to their less than beginnings. They cannot admit to their white trash or redneck backgrounds amidst the Harvard Divinity grads and those ministers who come from old money or who are descended from members of the Mayflower. Those ministers who come from that working class roots often feel like they have to hide those roots. We UU so often assume that those around us have a lot of education and the means to get that education, that it's hard for those in our midst who do not have those means to always feel welcome. This month, the theme is about risk, and it takes risk to admit both our privilege and where we do not have privilege. When we start talking about privilege, about power, sometimes there is a fear that those who have less will understandably demand to have more. And if I am the one with privilege, then I will be forced to give up some of my privilege. And I suspect that privilege, like love, is in fact a zero-sum game. And so people usually start to get afraid when we talk about privilege, and then they get angry. Esther took a risk to get her privilege, her status with the king. She might not have been chosen to be queen if she didn't take that risk. And she took a risk to use her privilege to reveal Haman for who he was, and in that, save the Jews. We can do no less. Who knows? Perhaps we have come into our privilege for such a time just as this. In a world without end, I know that to be true.